The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Back with you, it's Hour 2, it's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Connor Clark in. Welcome back to the show, Brian Christofferson from Husker 24-7. And can read him, Husker247.com, at Husker247BC. Follow him on Twitter. Brian, good to spend some time, man. How we doing?
I'm not doing too bad. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, good to talk with you. So what answer would you have? We have hilarity ensuing in the StreamYard comments as we're on video at the Hail Varsity YouTube channel, and crew is asking about the possibility of drinking 4 to 6 beers as he waits at the airport. He has been challenged to do 9 by listener Walter. BC, what do you say, aside from let's get a loan if we're going to drink anywhere between 3 and 7 beers at an airport?
Yeah. How long is the wait until he gets on the hops on the bird?
Probably not long enough.
He says, okay. "I'm about to fly out."
All right. You know, it also would depend if he's like a middle seat where you feel like you're going to have a stressful situation to get out and get in. You know, and you use the restroom. I think I need to know some more details, perhaps. But I always say stop at 4, but I'm getting old, so I'm kind of lame now.
Crew will be listening to a Nebraska radio show while he's being removed from the aisle.
Crew will be sitting there after 8 beers. That dude back there is not real.
No. That's funny. Let's talk Nebraska here. Tony White in front of the media today. And Brian, what'd you make of the call out that Coach White shared with us? Matt Rhule getting after his coaches on Saturday scrimmage.
That was interesting. That just kind of popped up because I didn't sense until today that the defense had a like really off scrimmage or anything from anything I'd heard. But I think that speaks to sort of the standard that the head coach has for that unit, what he thinks they can be. And, I mean, you heard Tony White at first. He's going through, like, some of the guys who made plays, like Bly Hill and Kai Wallen and some, you know, guys stepping up and sort of getting some activity that's good for them and their run toward moving up the depth chart. And then suddenly in the middle, it's like, yeah, got a little bit of a call out. And I just like sort of how that staff seems to flow. And I think it's real where they can take criticism. They appreciate that the head man holds them to a certain standard and is always going to, and they listen. You know, White listens to Matt Rhule, and Tony White listens to his other assistant coaches too. When it's like, okay, we've been called out. What can we do to solve this problem or be better by the time we take the field Tuesday? And the way he explained it is he's getting input from Evan Cooper and Dvoracek and T. Knighton and all those guys and taking it into factor. And, I think they're confident then if they communicate the right sort of plan or how they want to attack a practice in front of players, they've got enough veterans that can do what they're asked and that can filter down to the younger guys too. And so that's a promising thing. So obviously they're very excited about how they took the field the last 2 practices on defense since then. So, that was an interesting part of the press conference though. We get some of that I think behind the scenes more real talk than we've gotten with some previous staff. So it's always like kind of jolts you a little bit still.
Brian, as a whole, what do you make of Matt Rhule's public callouts? It hasn't just been coaching staff guys. When you go back to last year, guys coming into camp overweight. I mean, this year you had the comment with Mazuka figuring out how we do things around here at Nebraska. I'm paraphrasing from Matt Rhule. But what do you make of that being the standard for Rhule, that he gives messages not only to his team but also to his coaches through the media?
Yeah, and I think it works. I think it's shown that it can be receptive. He used to do that at Temple You go back, and he had some real tough cases to deal with individuals, and he'd send them home. You know, he'd send players home, and some guys who are in the NFL or were in the NFL and had good careers got sent home from camps back then. And so I've had to adjust, and I think that the media has somewhat to that a bit. Like, you know, last spring, I always use this example, but Tommy Hill wasn't there the first day of spring ball. And he was one of those guys that sort of got mentioned. And we have lived in a world where you kind of jump to the conclusion, Matt, and you're like, is he in the program anymore? You kind of, you know, you wonder, like, where's that going to go? Maybe that's the end of that story. And I think we learned through last season that's not the end of it. If guys respond in kind to it, they're going to have a chance to work themselves back. It worked for Tommy Hill. And so when I heard that, like about Mike Mazzucca, for instance, in January, early February, I kind of treated it differently this time. I thought, well, that's interesting. But I didn't like move on to the idea like, okay, he's not going to be in the mix here or anything like that. I thought, let's see how he responds. And it seems like he's sort of done that. And we're starting to hear that Stephon Thompson is sort of doing that too. So it's a tactic that you maybe don't use with everyone, but there's certain players, you know, are going to hear it. And if they can process it right, it can be effective for them. And so that's what they're doing.
Brian, I kind of took that comment today that we heard from Tony White, that everybody's kind of on an even playing field. It doesn't really matter if you're a player or a coach. And I feel like that message will get carried down through the assistant coaches and obviously through the veteran guys on the team. Did that kind of resonate with you as well, that, hey, just because you're a coach doesn't mean we won't get after you for something not being good enough?
Yeah, and players last offseason, I think, kind of picked up on that Rule will, you know, he has that same bar he wants his coaches to reach. And if they're not meeting it, they'll hear about it too. And I think players like that because it's like, okay, this is a two-way street. And there should be a standard for the guy who's telling me what to do as well and that he's doing it the right way. And there's a good process going on there. So no doubt that's how I took it. And I think he's got a staff. A lot of those guys have been around him long enough that they're family and they can have tough talks, I think, with each other. And they can take criticism from one another and know that it's meant to better that person. And, you know, you give Tony White a lot of credit too, because he came in, you know, as sort of the odd man who hadn't been a part of that family previously and seems to fit right in with it. And I also get the sense when I listen to Tony talk that he's taking mental notes about how he might do things when he's a head coach one day. And there's a lot of lessons like he, you know, that he can learn about sort of these points that Rule stresses to try to be efficient that he will use in the future when he gets his chance.
Brian Christofferson's with us here, Hail Varsity Radio. As can catch BC on Twitter at Husker247BC. That accountability from top down's talked about, but was realized Saturday, and Coach White touched on how the guys bounced back, BC, and, you know, was impressed with it. On the offensive side of the ball, and we'll get your take here on the last time Nebraska football lived up to their potential, what team or year comes to mind? I want to get your thoughts on the offensive potential. You know, how big a leap are you thinking that side of the ball can take to complement a really good returning defense?
Yeah, that's a big question. And, you know, it's been tough when you've looked at the stat sheet with Nebraska football recently. Whenever I get to the offensive stats, I always scroll down or to the very end from previous seasons. You're like, okay, they're going to be somewhere between like 106 and 133 here in whatever ranking I'm looking at. And so I always think of it in the context of get me to the point where when I'm looking up, okay, what is Nebraska's yards per pass attempt, for example, that I'm going to the middle of it. You know, I'm kind of searching like in that 60 to 75 range or something like that. And I really feel like I know you had Vogue's on earlier, and he's, I think, the best in our market at getting inside the numbers with that stuff. So he could do way more justice than I could. On that subject. But I really think, you know, just generally speaking, it's got to be the type of offense where you're in that middle ground. And then if this defense can be a top 10 defense, which I like the fact that they talk about that and have the confidence that they can be that, and then in the next sentence say, we got to put in the work to reach that. But if you could combine those two things together, top 10 defense, offense, it's, you know, 65th in some of these stats, you could win a lot of games with that.
Brian, in order for Nebraska to be that top 10 defense, as you say, you assume they have to be elite in at least one thing, if not a couple of things. Where do you see potential for this team, this defense specifically, to be elite in 2024?
I believe in the run defense still should stack right up there near the top. I think the schedule early on, I know Colorado's got the skilled guys and you got to take them, you know, seriously, but you know, you kind of look around that game and they're the first five games or so, you see opportunities to build confidence and good numbers. So I would start with the run defense, because of what we saw from Nash and Ty and how I think they actually do have guys they can rotate on the defensive front and not have a big drop off. So that would be one area. The area though, where it's got to change to I think really flip the script for this team is the takeaways. And I like that Matt Rhule, whenever he talks about turnover margin, everybody always wants to, for fair reason, harp on the giveaways last year, which were ridiculous, but he'll just as quickly point out, you know, they only got 13 takeaways and they've got to bump that number up significantly. So I want to see a defense that knocks the ball loose, you know, just to put it in simple terms again, where you're seeing the ball on the turf. There's the kind of hits where you jar it loose, you hit a QB from behind, someone picks it up, gets a, you know, fumble return. Those sort of plays are going to be what decide if you win a 4-point game or lose a 3-point game. And they've got to have a few more of those to go from being a really good defense to an elite defense. And that's the difference to me, is you don't just get off the field, you sometimes take it away and the marching band's playing. They need to be that kind of crew, I think.
BC, what about potential? What Nebraska team in your mind last lived up to potential, what you thought they could be going into the year?
Oh man. This is a tough answer because it got erased in Indianapolis. I mean, 2012, yeah, is the last time at the end of a regular season, if you count the 12-game schedule, where I felt like people had a good vibe on how Nebraska football had completed a mission, you know, and then people could scoff at that because of what happened the next week. But for like that weekend, that team and winning, running the table the last six games kind of stands out to me. But that's where it's tough because it's always just sort of been like these fleeting moments of satisfaction, and then you really get kicked in the jewels or something the next week or whatever. So, you know, I guess 2012 would be an answer, but I don't know that it's a good answer, honestly.
That's so good. You're right, dude. You feel good 1 minute. The next thing you need a bag of ice.
Yeah,
you know?
It's just not good.
The 2021 season was the ultimate kick in the jewels season, I think.
Yeah,
that was week after
times.
Week after week.
Yeah. That was the old tree stump.
That was rough. Brian, real quick, we got a couple minutes here, and this is kind of the million-dollar question here today with news breaking the last couple of hours. Where do you think Chucky Hepburn is going to end up next year?
Oh, man. I know there's murmurs about Michigan State, and I've stepped away the last hour or two from it, so I don't know if some things have changed. I kind of wonder if it's another place in the Big Ten that's not Nebraska, but oh, we'll see. You know, it's kind of one of those funny things, you know, Chucky Hepburn, who people have kind of wondered, is he ever going to go in the portal and could he come home and all that stuff. Now that he's in the portal, of course, Nebraska just added a point guard, you know, a few days ago to build depth, you know, with Raleigh Wooster and obviously Ulis is still over there. So, my prediction is not Nebraska, but I'd love to be wrong on that, but that's my prediction.
Maybe somewhere closer to Nebraska, just up the road in downtown Omaha. Maybe he lands back at Creighton.
Brian, before we get you out of here, the question of the day that we've been discussing on Hail Varsity that we need to get to. I'm going to the Nuggets-Lakers game on Monday night. I am looking to secure some tickets to set up the background. What is your take on attending a sporting event in person. You're the kind of guy that wants to just get in there, give me the cheap price, get the nosebleeds. Should I go sit somewhere in the lower bowl where I can find a reasonable price? Do I shell out for a suite? What's your take on getting that experience going to the sporting event, one of the big ones such as an NBA playoff game?
For basketball, you got to get within the if it's a three-level gym, you got to get within the first two levels, I feel like. No disrespect to season ticket holders up in 307 at PBA or anything, but if this is like a one-time deal, you got to be within the two levels. Otherwise, I just feel like with basketball, it's too far away. It's not worth it.
How do you feel about a potential good deal on like the seventh row right behind the hoop?
Oh, I'd be fine. I think that's great.
You're not worried about the obstructed view?
It's obstructed, dude. You're stealing your money.
Oh, I don't know. I would go if you feel the price is right enough. I would go with that, and I wouldn't hold back. I can tell there's dissenting opinion on this.
That's why it's the discussion today.
I don't want to get too far into the ring, but
you're good.
I would say I would go with that. Like if you told me if I was your buddy and you got two tickets. And you said seventh row behind the hoop, I'd be pretty stoked about it.
Okay.
Brian Christopherson, Husker 24/7 BC on Twitter and Husker247.com. Read him and the crew there. BC will holler again soon. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you later.
All right, there he is, Brian Christopherson. We'll check in with Coach Barnett next on Hail Varsity.